Hello and welcome to the 116th episode of the Hulkcast. I'm James Rushton and I'm joined by Jack Grimsey, who returns to the Hulkcast after a small hiatus. How are you doing, Jack?
Great, James, and yeah, returned to the Villa after a small hiatus yesterday. I think Nottingham Forest was the first match I watched since Hull, which maybe was the last Hulkcast. Definitely was the last Hulkcast I was on, but yeah, I think it was the last Villa match I watched as well. And wow, it's back to the old times. Villa actually won, but it was scary.
Oh yeah, pretty squeaky on those seats. I was edging closer and closer to the edge of it as the match drawn on. Villa fighting back from going a goal, from an equaliser, something different. They usually set up for the 1-1, but they scored again and they took the win. We'll talk about that later on anyway, Jack. But how have Villa come on since that whole game?
It was down, but I think trending back up. What, it's now 6 league matches without a loss?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that.
No.
Which is weird. It seems worse. But no, we can't complain about that. A 6 game unbeaten one's nothing to sniff at. It's just a shame that two of those game unbeaten games were those 0-0 draws where Villa could have nicked something, especially against Middlesbrough, where Adama Traore was sent off within minutes of appearing back on Villa Park turf. What do you think about that red card, Jack?
Yeah, I did not watch. I was only following along on Twitter, and I saw that 4 or 5 minutes in, Adama was sent off, and I was like, what? And, you know, playing with Adama and your team and 11 men is not too much different than playing with 10. He just takes up a little more space, but you still, Villa at home, you have to get a result.
Exactly. Villa went, for the most part, unbeaten at home last season, and they're continuing in that vein this season. They still haven't lost at home, despite those big losses against Cardiff and Reading away. Did you catch any of that at all? I don't suppose you did watch it, but did you get any feelings from Twitter about those two? Those big losses?
Yeah, Cardiff was a little bit on Periscope, I think I saw, right? And because I don't think it was televised, so I don't know. I don't really remember. It's been a blur. But losing 3-0 to Cardiff, and I know they're good this year, but it's still just based on how they've been playing lately. You have to get a point. I think if you're Villa, you should be getting a point at least from every match.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, with your new job and everything, you should be watching.
Or maybe not getting a point, but in contention to get a point. Not don't lose 3.
Yeah, you've got to just at least play the game of football and try and do something, right?
Yeah. So and then Reading. I mean, it's what happens in the Championship. You can get beaten by anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Villa have come out. Well, Cardiff have come out the best of those games. They're still at the upper echelons of the Championship, but Reading have fallen apart. It looks like Villa, though, are, you know, resurgent after that 3-0 win away at Barnsley last Sunday. I don't think you've seen much of Keenan Davis apart from yesterday, but what do you think of him up front, the young lad?
No, I've been excited by him. He got called up, right? He got called up like a month and a half ago.
To England as well.
For the U18s, yeah. It's great. It's great. That's what I expect to see. I have no problem with Villa going down to the Championship if they were going to play the youth. So if it was all players like Keenan Davis, I'm in favor of that. If we were stuck in the division but playing youngsters, that's good for the future of the club.
Yeah, exactly. And we saw Keenan Davis come to the spotlight, really. I think we imagined that maybe Grealish, Hepburn, Murphy and Andre Green would take up that spotlight. But Davis has really made it his own. If you've seen much of Davis, what do you think his best qualities are?
It's not really one of his qualities, but I think what helps him is that the opposition don't know much about him.
Oh, of course, the fear of the unknown.
Unexpected element. Yeah, I mean, obviously as a youngster, you're not going to be able to go the full 90 minutes that often. Yesterday he was subbed off on 72, but you know, he has good pace and he's willing, he doesn't fall over easily. He's willing to try to give his effort, not trying to con the referee. And as we saw yesterday, he's obviously not good at it. The referee didn't
Yeah, he didn't argue.
Give a foul when he went down.
Didn't argue.
Yeah, no, and he doesn't argue either. That's good.
Yeah, what I gather from Davis is he's very intelligent, which is very surprising for a youth player because you see some stupidity. Well, not stupidity, it's a bit harsh. But
it's naivety.
Naivety from maybe Jack Grealish. When he's playing a game, he thinks he can maybe do a little bit more than he can do. But with Davis, I think he knows his...
Or selfishness.
Yes, yeah. Yes. With Davis, I think he knows his limits. I think he knows what he's good at, and he knows how to use his weight. He knows how to use his athleticism, and he knows how to, you know, he's very smart when it comes to link-up play, and that's brilliant to see from someone who's, you know, not even 1,000 minutes into his senior career at the moment, which is the sky's the limit for players like that who are so intelligent at such a young age, I feel.
Yeah, yeah, and like you're saying, I think a little bit of that is the nerves. He's probably always going to try to play it to his teammates' strong foot and try to concentrate on setting up his teammates more than going it alone. You know, and look at Jonathan Kodjo. Why wouldn't you pass the ball to him and have him try to run past 3-4 defenders like he did in winning that free kick that won us the match?
Exactly. This time last year when we were playing Nottingham Forest, I think it was under Di Matteo, we were up 2-0, weren't we? And then it collapsed, if you remember.
Oh, man, I've tried to erase that from my memory, but I do remember it because I was still excited about Villa's prospects of going back up when Di Matteo was the boss last year. It was so early.
It was one of those matches where I think we put on every striker. I think we had just
that was what made us get Lansbury, yeah? Because
he scored that in that last minute goal.
Then he became the villain. He's average now.
Yeah, he's fallen off the face of the earth apparently. And after that red card in, I think it was against Borough, that red card.
Yeah,
it was 55. A strange one that was. Yeah. We beat Nottingham Forest yesterday 2-1. Jack, how do you feel coming off the back of a? I mean, it's not an entirely deserved win, is it?
No, if you have 33% of the ball, I think you have to say a little bit of it was against the run of play. Like our first goal, before that, Forest were playing better. But Villa ended up scoring and they show resiliency. You know, you can be getting punched the whole game, but you throw the haymaker and you win. And that's how it goes a lot of the times in the championship when teams can't necessarily finish off all their chances. Johnson was good. And I think what's important is 2 wins from 2. That's huge. Just starting to turn it around at the right time. Because then you have Burton, Bolton, and Wolves. You know, Wolves are good now. So
that's Kanye West fixed Wolves.
Yeah. I think George Mendes fixed Wolves, to tell you the truth. But
yeah, we've got, I wouldn't say it's a too tough spat of games coming up. I feel that Burton's quite tricky and Wolves is obviously quite tricky, but you have to get that win at Bolton. No matter what happens at Burton or Wolves, you have to get those wins at home. I feel that the Burton match is especially tricky because they've got a real attitude up there in Burton of if you come down here and try to play direct attacking football in the Pirelli Stadium, we'll knock your teeth out. And they've done that to Fulham and Birmingham so far. So after that win, what I'd look for Villa to do is go to Burton and at least try and grab the draw, because Burton aren't the scariest team in the Championship, Jack, obviously, but they have delivered 2 knockout blows to 2 pretty big teams. You know, Birmingham aren't doing too well, but they're a team you'd expect to beat Burton, like Villa, and go in there and expect them to win.
Yeah, exactly. But exactly, at this point, it's keep the run going. If you get a point away from home, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'll take that any day of the week. A lot of people will insult Burton in a way by saying that they are not the most gifted team, and they're not. They're not the most tactically smart team, and they're not.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have 100 million to spend on their squad. I don't know how you can criticize them for that. They do what they can with what they have. They stay in the league, and however they, I mean, it's not like Villa play Pep Guardiola football.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be tough on Tuesday night going up there, but I'm very galvanized after that win. I feel the team should be as well. Winning like that makes you feel good, I feel. Sometimes you want those blowouts of 6 or 7-0. Sometimes you want those 3-0s where you see a hat-trick. But seeing a 2-1 where you don't entirely deserve that result, it does feel good. It feels like you stole something. And you know.
Yeah, and I think it's how you can chalk it up to is just the individual quality. There were just 3 moments of brilliance, really. The Doma, his goal, obviously. Kodjo on that run that won the free kick, and then Hourihan putting it in the back of the net. You know, it's like Villa have the stars.
That keeper really should have.
Yeah, he should have. But yeah, Jordan Smith, I guess, for 9-4. But Villa had the stars, and that's kind of why they. I mean, Daryl Murphy, that was a good goal he had, and he could have had another maybe.
Yeah, I think Sam Johnson saved it with his crotch, and it just it just trickled wide, didn't it, when he was through on goal?
Oh my, that was
a nervous one.
You didn't see a replay of it at the stadium, but I don't know how that hit. I think it hit his heel and rolled all the way across the face of the goal and to safety for a corner.
Yeah, it looked like it was going in from my angle, and you just see everyone stop, and it's like, it's gone in, hasn't it? And it just trickles wide, and the relief, the satisfaction on that. And I think we should speak about Sam Johnson, Jack, because I don't think he was a player that you or Robert were a particularly big fan of when we brought him in, considering we had Pierluigi Gallini at the start. But I think he's really coming onto his own now. He's really dominating that goalkeeper position at Villa. He's making those big, big, big saves, and that can't be said enough. And he's really marshalling that back line in a way we have not seen since maybe Brad Friedel all those years ago.
Yeah, I'm definitely more than happy to apologize again to Sam Johnson, because originally, I have to say, I got that one wrong. He's come in, he's been good. The only thing is, I wish we owned him permanently. You know, I don't want him to go to United and then lose money on him or something, but I wish he could just stay around at Villa at this point.
Yeah, he's an incredible keeper. He's not maybe the smartest, but when... It's just the confidence he has now. It's more so the confidence and the cockiness he has to know what he can get away with his back four. And, you know, you see him bossing John Terry around on the pitch.
And yeah, that's something, you know, from a 24-year-old. If I saw him and John Terry in the back alley, I would just turn around and run. I know they wouldn't catch up to me, but if I ran into them, I would be over. I would just turn around the other way.
I mean, speaking about John Terry, how do you feel about him so far at Villa? Because we're catching up after all of those weeks. How has he come on at Villa for you?
Yeah, he's pretty much been fine. I think the commentator yesterday summed it up really well. He's enjoying the physical challenges of the championship, and I guess I didn't really think about that as much, but with the way this league is, I think John Terry's a decent defender to have back there. He has all the experience in the world, so... I mean, he sees things coming maybe before they do, because his reactions are a little bit slower. So that's okay. And a one-on-one physical tussle with a striker, he's not going to lose.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was a bit shaky at the start maybe, but I think he's really turned that position around.
He hadn't practiced with this team, you know. Half the reason for great teams is they're playing together for 1, 2, 3 years. You know, the Juventus backline that just... It's no longer, but those guys were together for years.
Yeah, and while Aston Villa can't command the presence of one Leonardo Bonucci, they do have James Chester, and he's not bad either, is he?
Not
Bonucci style, but he's not. He's no dud, Jack.
No, and he's no less Scott either, and that's really what it comes down to, is just eliminating players that are going to be a problem in the dressing room and also problematic on the pitch. So... I mean, Steve Bruce is finding the right mix. I know I've been saying Bruce out in past weeks, but at this point, I think you kind of have to stick with him, and he's getting some results now, so we just have to hope it can keep improving.
So you say it's good to stick with Steve Bruce, and I totally agree. I think he has earned his stripes now after all that criticism that rightly came in. He has given some proof that he's able to do the job. He's able to marshal his team. But do you think there was any legitimacy to any Bruce out feelings among the fan base?
Yeah, I do. And I still can see why people would be holding on to the sentiments, because we're not playing great football. You know, if you're just looking at the stats, Villa had 36.1% of the possession yesterday. If you look at passes, Villa 344 passes, for 616. You know, it's Villa have these very skilled players, or should, in midfield. Maybe Glenn Whelan's not a pass master, but they should be a team that can dominate the opposition by outplaying them simply because they have better players. I think that's fair to say. You know, we spent the money, you should have that there.
So, after all this money's been spent, I'd like you to name your most disappointing Aston Villa player so far in the team, regardless of if they're bought this year.
You mean one that we bought? Oh, no, I was just going to say Alan Hutton, just on the fact that he's still around.
I'd go for Glenn Whelan. I think he's calm, he's great, but it's not that he's disappointing, it's just that teams are really that onto him. He's too easy to exploit. He's too calm on the ball.
It's very predictable.
Yeah,
very predictable.
There was one point in the Nottingham Forest match yesterday where I think he waited impossibly long for the ball to come to him, and he was just taken off him like taking candy from a baby. He was just, from what I saw in the whole end, it looked like the ball was traveling to him for 5 minutes, and it felt like that, and they just took it off him, and he was just he stood still after it was took after him, just put his hands in the air. And I'm not sure, you buy players like Glenn Whelan for that intelligence and that leadership, and none of it really shows. It's not like, I'll go back again to Bonucci at Milan, who was brought in for that leadership and experience, and he will grab the match and his players literally by the neck. And Glenn Whelan just kind of holds his hands up and he's like, why me? sort of Balotelli, why always me? Glenn Whelan's my disappointment, Jack. Do you think that's fair at all to say?
Yeah, certainly. And players like Glenn Whelan, I think if you get them on a free transfer, they're fine. But at 33 and his legs are gone, you know, I don't know how much pace he had to begin with, but I don't think he has too much left. Like you're saying, he had to wait for the ball. You knew he wasn't going to do much if he had to run and get it and do something. But yeah, I mean, it's just 33 is old.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's young in football terms. You're heading for the retirement home, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, when there's clubs like Leipzig that won't buy anyone that's older than 24, you have to kind of start looking at that. You know, John Terry, 36, but he was free. You just can't give Stoke any money for a player they were probably trying to get rid of anyway.
Yeah, and turning that around, since we last spoke, who has been the AVFC player who has impressed you the most?
I think Josh Onuma has been fantastic.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday wasn't the best, but just the fact that we bring in a player like that and are giving him the chance. But I don't know. El Mohamedi has been good. Hurahain, obviously fantastic. And I don't know, I guess probably Keenan Davis, I guess, is probably who you're going to say. I guess I haven't really seen that much of him.
I'm going to go for Albert Adoma.
Oh, yeah, that was obvious. But
I think Albert Adoma really brings, even in, you know, when you lose, it's like he doesn't care. It's like, not like he doesn't care in the Lescott and Richards manner. It's like it doesn't faze him or affect him at all. He's just there to play football.
Doesn't get depressed, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like Kodjic. I think you see Jonathan Kodjic in the same manner as Benteke and all those great Villa forwards before him get visibly frustrated at not being able to win every game or not being able to get to that shot or being caught offside. But Adoma quite literally doesn't care. He's not the type of player who'll get into a fight. He's not the type of player that will lunge into a two-footed tackle based on pure passion. He won't get caught up in the situation. He plays football like a pickup game in a park. And that's really, really, really good to see. Especially, I mean, if any kid is listening to this podcast, I think, and you want to be a footballer, I say, look at Albert Adoma, who doesn't, it's like he's not bothered about anything around him, like he's in another dimension almost. And that's incredible to see.
Yeah, kind of a model professional, I guess. And Snodgrass has been solid, but.
Yeah. I mean, with Snodgrass, a lot of people were saying he was terrible yesterday, and I didn't see that at all.
I didn't see him being terrible.
I saw an article, I think it was on Football Fancast or one of these sites that kind of collates the tweets. And a lot of people were kind of saying, you know, it was a terrible performance. It was a 5 out of 10. It was a 2 out of 10, stuff like that. And I didn't see that. I saw some quality crosses and I saw a bit of moxie, a bit of grit and graft. That's what I'm on about. Going and tracking back and getting those balls. Same with Kodjic as well. It was like a new age of Jonathan Kodjic where he's going to win a ball like Ayew.
Yeah. I mean, Snodgrass he attempted 5 crosses, and by Opta statistics, he was judged to have put in 2 good crosses. Both of them were from open play. And Adoma attempted 7 crosses and all from open play, and none of them were judged as a good cross.
Yeah, and exactly. It's like our bias. We see after that match as Adoma being this revelation on the pitch. That's true. But at the end of the day, it was Snodgrass who was putting those quality balls across the box. Those lethal ones. That
And it's deceptive because if you look at pass accuracy, Adoma had 88% and Snodgrass was only 53%. So he wasn't passing as much. He was trying to get him into the area. But I'd have to look at it a little more to see how effective he really was passing, I guess, Snodgrass.
Yeah, I still see Adoma. I don't know why he wasn't around the team. Some people have been telling me that maybe Bruce didn't favour him, kind of the same situation with Scott Hogan, where he's just on the wings of the side. But I think after last season, where he put in 10 assists for Aston Villa, which is no small number of assists, I don't think he should have been on the bench at all or in the reserves. Should have been on the pitch.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the thing is, for a league like the Championship, you're going to have to rotate heavily. So stockpiling players is definitely a good thing. But yeah, it's about how to get the most out of those guys.
Yeah, are you glad to see Jonathan Kodjia back from injury?
Yeah, it gives me hope that Villa actually can do something this season, because you saw the kind of a slow start, but then you go, oh, without the star striker, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
I don't know why I worded it that way, because it's, of course, you're going to be glad to see Jonathan Kodjia come back.
I mean, I guess you're saying how excited.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of criticism goes to his way for being greedy, and I look at the last match and I don't see how anyone can kind of come to that opinion where he played that ball in for Adoma, which led to the first goal. After that, he can be as great as he wants, I feel. You've set up a teammate. You've done your job more so than anyone else in the team has.
Yeah, he assisted a goal and basically assisted the second goal by winning the free kick. He held off two defenders, finally ended up being brought down, and he said, oh, I don't need to take this. He wasn't being a Neymar to Cavani, you know. What if El Mohamedy came in and took the ball, or Glenn Whelan takes the ball and says, I'm giving this to James Chester to take.
It was like the end of last season against Brighton when Bakuna wanted to take the free kick and Hourihane just took the ball off him.
Yeah. That's how it should be, because Hourihane can throw those.
It's a less high profile Cavani and Neymar, Hourihane and Bakuna, I feel. Around from that Forest match, Jack, feelings. Are you mainly positive going into this Burton game, or are you feeling negative?
Yeah. No, it's certainly really positive, because in years past, I feel like Villa would have at least conceded the equalizer. Even if, like you said, we looked at the game last year, they did concede that equalizer, making it 2-2.
Yeah, I mean, we did go 1-1 down, and we were very, extremely lucky not to go 2-1 down, as we said, after that Johnson save. The thing is, Villa conceded and immediately sprung back into the game like they've never done before, and that's incredibly exciting to see. I can't say that enough. That Villa team.
Yeah, exactly. It's what you should do. I mean, it was a bit after halftime. Villa weren't looking bad at that early in the second half. I think later on it was scarier, but there were moments for Forest, and that goal comes in from Daryl Murphy, and yeah, like you said, a response. That's what you want to see, because in years past, maybe Villa would have gone flat and conceded a second or a third at that point.
Well, exactly as you said, we saw that last year, didn't we, in the reverse fixture? Well, not the reverse fixture, the identical fixture. We saw Villa just flop after being two goals up. The problem with Villa is I think they seem to fall asleep at halftime, and there was a sense of that, but thankfully they managed to wake up.
Maybe they need to drink more Carabao or whatever out in the locker room.
Well, they're not in the cup anymore, so they won't be getting any free shipments of Carabao.
Well, the FA Cup better get sponsored by something.
Yeah, hopefully an energy drink or any Pro Plus or any caffeine tablets about that can wake up this Villa team. But they don't seem what they need.
What does Recon Group make in that market?
I don't know. I know I think it's in China or Hong Kong, it is the Rurikang Group and their pharmaceuticals and energy and health products like aloe vera gels and all that. So maybe, yeah, Tony Shaw can link his Villa team up with some of that mad pharmaceutical, new age caffeine-y stuff to keep them awake.
Yeah, I mean, if Vardy drinks Red Bull before the game, then, you know, there's going to be something healthier than that.
That's because he's a tramp, not because he wants to stay up. It's because he's got nothing else to do. Probably vodka in it as well. We've known Jamie Vardy.
No, I think probably port, or I don't know what he drinks it. He ounces a port the night before the game so he can fall asleep.
In a brown plastic bag, a brown paper bag, sorry.
Yeah. I don't know, as long as Villa players don't shoot the penalties down the center.
Oh, yeah, that was incredible. He kind of shot the three penalties down the center in a row. Mm-hmm. How do you not know that? Being the striker of such prestige as Jamie Vardy, I'm making that mistake.
Prestige and predictability, I guess.
Yeah, prestige comes there. Predictability must come with prestige. Speaking of prestige, I know we've spoken a bit about Burton Albion. They're not very prestigious, Jack, so when we head to them on Tuesday, do we expect, or should we expect Villa to rattle them by 10, 15 goals?
Well, they've conceded 15 this season, so that's, I don't know, that's about, I think, tied for second worst in the division.
I guess, but
with
they're Forest, unbeaten.
No, sorry.
They are unbeaten at home.
Oh, that's true.
And I mean, if Burton come to Villa Park, you expect to beat them or batter them. But going there is a different story. It's not like you're saying, oh, it's a cup tie. But it may as well be. It may as well be when you verse like the postman. And that's no disrespect to me, but it's to them. But it's like, you know, when you get those cup ties and it's just like, oh, God. Like when we had Wickham, you just know that it's not going to turn out the way you want it to.
Yeah, that was sad. But you're right. Unbeaten at home and... I just saw that they were battered by Leeds 5-0, and that's kind of gave me some hope that Villa could do something similar.
Yeah, I think they look to spring a good counter at home. Birmingham were caught unawares by that, and Fulham as well. And Fulham are, you know, Jokinovic's team. They're a good team, and so it's not just Redknapp fucking up, it's Jokinovic being caught out as well.
It was the tweet about Redknapp, sorry, it was... Someone said it's like you hire someone to paint your house and they paint it and you look at it for 20 minutes and then you fire them. No, it was like you buy someone to paint your house and they buy 20,000 gallons of paint and do nothing. And then you fire them because they did nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the reaction in Birmingham, from what I've seen, has been kind of a bit of disgust at how Redknapp's been treated, but I guess that's because it's Harry Redknapp and no one treats Redknapp like that, I guess, in that gold cartel way. No one ever escapes the clutches of Harry Redknapp, I guess.
Yeah.
But Burton should be a win. I'm feeling hopeful of that. Moving on to Bolton next Saturday at 3 p.m. Villa Park. That should... Yeah, there's no reason.
They don't have a win all season.
They should get... If their first win of the season comes at Villa Park against Aston Villa, then I'll be back on the Broussard train.
Yeah. It's unavoidable.
There'll be no joke about that. That's serious. Because, you know, we are early in the season, but every win now is critical, especially if you're playing Bolton. A team in such dire form as Bolton, Phil Parkinson's Bolton. They had a transfer embargo, so they haven't even been able to buy anyone who's not on a free or a half season.
Yeah, mode. It's not that it's hard. It's really hard for them. You can't blame them for being the position that they're in. That's just why you have to beat them down.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly difficult to say that Villa should pour on a misery for Bolton, but they have to ensure their own promotion to the Premier League. And any loss now, especially when you can pick up those 3 points, because it's not going to be, you know, against Wolves, Middlesbrough, Fulham, those tabletopping teams, or Cardiff. It's against Bolton, who are rock bottom and don't look like they're capable of doing anything. That's not for lack of trying. It's just because circumstances that grant you championship success are not in their hands at all.
Yeah, if they had Villa's budget, they might be top. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Phil Parkinson's... we know Phil Parkinson's a good manager because he masterminded Bradford kicking us out the League Cup. We know that.
Oh, God, he has our number.
Yeah, he does have our number, and that's why I'm wary. I think we should win. But again, it's that same Burton Albion thing where a team will look to... If you look to force the football down their throat and score 6, they'll turn you around and they won't have any of it because it's seen as disrespect, I guess. It's like running up the score in American football. You can't do that in soccer, but if you try, you're going to get turned over. It's seen as disrespect.
Yeah, or kicked in the face.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's another thing we've got to watch out for is that I think Aston Villa are seen as the prima donnas of the championship. They are seen as a excessively rich team and, you know, our stadium doesn't help. We've got a massive stadium. We play with the most expensive team assembled in the championship bar Middlesbrough. We have a highly paid manager and we have got a rich owner. Any team that is in a misfortune sees us as the enemy, as they would do. It becomes almost political in a way.
Yeah, it's really easy to fire up the team if you're the boss in that situation. So these guys make 10 times as much as you and they're shite. Let's go kick them, you know?
Yeah, almost any given Sunday type of attitude. The type of attitude that sees Neil Warnock guiding his team to the top, stuff like that. You know, it's the underdogs, the whole spirit of the underdog thing. And I am wary about that Bolton match. We should win. I believe we will win, but if Villa come into that match like they're going to disrespect Bolton, same with Burton, they stand a chance. You know, Bolton have to pick up points this season. It'll be very irregular for them to not pick up points this season or a win. You know, they're not going to go the whole season without winning a game, and if they do, that would be the dodgiest miracle of all time.
Yeah, you would think someone had bet on it or something if that happens.
Yeah, we mentioned politics slightly before, Jack. So, do we want to speak at all about Keith Wyness and some of his comments earlier in reference to the monumental day in America over in Jack's side of the pond, where NFL players seem to be really pissed off about some of the comments coming from the White House.
Yeah, and I think deservedly so.
Yeah, so if you're not in the clear about this, or not in the know about this, this is not me or Jack taking a political stance on anything, even though I feel like we should, rightly so.
Yeah, it's not a political rights stance. I think it's a human rights stance at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not.
So, over in the UK, the Jacksonville Jaguars had the pleasure of hosting the Baltimore Ravens at Wembley for the whole international series thing. Most of the teams took, usually, we'll go into the whole knee thing actually. Colin Kaepernick takes a knee for whatever reason, be it the treatment of African Americans by police or by officials. He takes a knee during the national anthem because he feels that the anthem doesn't represent him anymore. So he takes a knee during it out of respect. He's not disparaging the flag. I feel that people are trying to pin on him. And today we saw Donald Trump, after a rally in Alabama, take aim at those NFL players, saying, you know, they're highly paid prima donnas. It's a privilege. How great it would be if an owner came in on the field, grabbed his coat and went, get that son of a bitch off the field. And the majority of NFL owners have come out attacking that. And the majority of players have come out attacking that, which is why today in London we see two teams take a knee during the national anthem of the United States. And in doing so, they actually stood up during the English national anthem, which is quite the shot. Keith Wyness, at the same time this was happening, during the whole anthem thing when the Ravens and the Jaguars were taking a knee, I'm just going to go on his Twitter so I can quote him right. He says, please keep politics and politicians out of sport, which is quite hard to do, Jack, I think.
I mean, it's too late. The politician has already been in the sports. This is the reaction directly to that. That's how I see it. And the thing is, however you feel about kneeling during the national anthem or not, the point is, since there is freedom of speech, which is what the soldiers who are allegedly being disrespected fought for, is that so anyone can have a voice.
Yeah, it's not like we want to go into this and attack Wyness and go, oh shit, he's messed up here. But it's like, if you're going to bring in the politics into the sport by saying, please keep the politics out of the sport, it's like the game. If you mention it, you've already lost. If you mention the politics in the sport, the politics are already in the sport.
Yeah, precisely. It's like the sport didn't want the politics in. We're not putting politics in sport. You put the sport in politics. I don't know.
And even then, the sport is a political act. When it's, you know, we have Jesse Owens and the Black Panther salute. We have James McClane with the poppy. We have the poppy on the field as well. You know,
yeah, black people were not allowed to play baseball until Jackie Robinson, and that was almost 100 years after slavery had ended. I don't know how you can say that it's not inherently political. It always has been.
Sports is political, and politics, we treat politics like sport on the other hand, you know.
Why do you play the national anthem before sports that aren't international? If it's England versus USA, play both national anthems. If it's the Premier League, they don't play the national anthem. Why would they? It's not an international fixture. In America, they play the national anthem before every game, in my opinion, for no reason, and it just gives you a chance to create things. You know, he wouldn't have kneeled during it if it wasn't played. It's impossible. There was a thing, I don't know, I'm going into it now, but a few years ago, there was a thing where it came out where it was shown that the military had been giving the NFL money to have soldiers on the field before games because they wanted to, I don't know, show their power or show the jets flying over to show people that the military spends all the money. I don't, you know.
Yeah, you can't, like, say that politics shouldn't be in sport. If we're allowing politics to be in sport, it's, you know, it's not that politics aren't allowed in sport. It's just that either side, whatever side you're on, doesn't want to see the other politics in sport. So it's either a case of have it all or have none. And no one's going to accept it having none, because that would mean removal of the Stars and Stripes, removal of the Jets, removal of the national anthem, removal of colours, removal of everything. You know, we are in sports because of the politics. We like to see our colours. We like to see our bands. We like to band together. That's what politics is. On the other hand, Jack, you know, you have the Trump and Clinton thing, or every election in the UK, where it's like a sports game. You have these debates and you have the stats. You almost have XG.
In
these political debates of who's got the win, who's got the quality chances.
It's like boxing, you know, they show the power punches or something to CompuBox.
You see Monday Night Football with Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher dissecting everything, and it's almost the same studio setup in those election debates. It's
unreal. They do this wrong on the campaign trail or something. I don't know. You know, if the people that say keep politics out of sport, well, you know, I go on Twitter to talk about sports. So if people are tweeting politics, that's annoying to me. Do I complain about it all the time? No, it's life is inherently intermixed.
Yeah, I mean, we follow sports for the narrative, I feel. We don't follow Aston Villa because they're a cool team to support. We don't follow Arsenal or whatever because they're the cool team. We follow these teams because we have some kind of connection to them. And, you know, we have connections to, or assumed connections to, these political parties and politicians. So it's always inherently going to be political. You know, we're divided into away support, home support. It's always us and them, and it's always that political attitude. So the problem we've got now is people saying keep politics out of sports, but it's far, far, far too late for that.
It's too late.
You're done, man.
We should have had a planet sports and planet politics, but we all live on the earth and we can't destroy the earth because otherwise we'll have nowhere to talk about sports or politics.
Yeah, and even then, I mean, if you see loads of African-American football players take a knee because they feel that the flag doesn't represent them anymore, and your first thought is, God, not again. They're at it again, that type of feeling. I think that's wrong. That's, you know, just regardless of what your colour is, I feel that you should be allowed to, you know, if you're not happy with your deal, that's the whole thing that these, you know, Western countries are built on, that basis of capitalism. If the consumer is not happy with his deal, he has every right to complain about it. And, you know.
Yeah, and the customer is always right? That's
exactly
what it is.
And I know that's a bit of a lighthearted, you know, we're going a bit lighthearted about something that's very real, but it is, I don't know how to process it, to be honest, when people are saying, keep it out. And then, you know, in 2 weeks, we'll have the poppy on the field. I just don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's funny. It's just funny. You can pick your issues or whatever, but there's some things that don't change, and that's, you can't separate these two things completely.
Maybe Keith Weiner should stick to the sports, Jack.
Yeah. I mean, I usually just try to because I don't like those conversations, but yeah.
Definitely.
I'll stick to complaining about Villa.
Yeah, I think we can all band around Aston Villa and the fact that if they're shit, we have someone to blame, and that is maybe keep the Weiner out of Villa if things go down the pan.
Oh, man. Yeah, I hope... I hope Bruce can keep the football in Villa.
Keep the Aston Villa in the Premier League maybe would be a good one. Anything but keep the politics out of sports or the politicians out of sports, because they're always going to be involved. But yeah, Jack, I feel that is enough from us today.
Yeah, I think so. The only thing I didn't mention, and I'm seeing it on the table, Sunderland in 22nd. I hope we can somehow send Sunderland down or something. I don't know. That's just a crazy, not necessarily, but that's a crazy one to follow.
Yeah, definitely. Birmingham, Sunderland, and Bolton are bottom, and we'll join you after that Bolton game on Sunday. I'll be here with another guest, whomever it may be.
Actually, five of the bottom six teams' names start with a B. That's
quite the coincidence.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully their relegation won't be decided on alphabetical order, because I think that is one of the criteria that we'll get to eventually.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be a Villa fan if that's the case.
Yeah, stay up on that A. Stay up on that A. But yeah, Jack, I'm very happy to have you back on the Hulkcast, and I hope you can join us in future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and all the best for all our listeners at 7500 to Holt. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no matter who you are, thank you very much for listening to the Hulkcast this week. We'll join you after the Bolton game next week. And as always, any feedback is appreciated. Probably don't direct it all at Jack's way, because he won't be around for that much during the week. So if you've got any hassle, I'm happy to take it on, especially after such an episode where we've discussed certain topics that might be considered a bit not in your usual football podcast. But yeah, I'm at Jamo Russian on Twitter. And where can people find you, Jack?
Yeah, I'm at Jack Grimsey, JACKGRIMSE, on Twitter or on Facebook. So yeah, either way, send me the feedback.
Yeah, well, Jack's got that locked down, and hopefully Villa have 6 points locked down by the time we return. You can catch us on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere you find good podcasts, and hopefully this is one of your good podcasts. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.